For April the 4th, 2014, we talk about the game underscore jam explosion. We ask you which sequels have been most improved, and then we actually talk about video games for a change. Welcome to the 56th level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. It's number 56. Getting up there. Not significant at all until 75. It's a real slog.
What is 75 traditionally like for comic books? Do they do like a gold edition or
it's a
platinum?
I think it's clear. It's like cellophane.
Huh.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Well, I mean, don't comics go in reverse? They start out with Golden Age, then they go to Silver Age, then
I think
the
that
Silver
that is
Surfer Age.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that is actually just like a way to say things get worse over time, which is totally not true. But yeah,
which totally makes our multiplayer prompt depressing.
Who knows? people wrote in, but guys, I have a #/meme. About me.
I'm trying to...
Wait, specifically for you.
Specifically for me. I didn't start it. It was inspired by something that happened earlier tonight on my Dark Souls 2 stream. I was thinking out loud, saying, should I go back to the Emerald Herald and cash these souls in to level up before this boss fight? And I said, no, fuck it. And people just started writing #colo.
Oh, that's amazing.
In the chat. And I'm just narcissistic enough to be like, for as much as I hate YOLO, that's kind of funny.
That's how you know you've arrived in life, when you have your own hashtag.
Yeah, I know, right? Anybody can start a hashtag, but it takes a special man to have a facetious hashtag started about them. So we did it. He wept for there were no more lands to conquer.
Colo!
There we go. So what do we have in store for you tonight? We have some news. I know at least two of our stories are exceedingly negative, but we're going to try and keep a smile on. Can you hear the smile on my voice, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, this is my broadcaster voice. I'm smiling from ear to ear.
That's wait, how smiles work?
What's that?
Is that how smiles work?
Well, if you're the Joker.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm picturing this Joker-esque. Might be happy, might be getting my prostate probed. Kind of smile.
Yeah, no, that's the trick. You gotta stand on the balls of your feet and smile when you talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wait, what is that the trick to?
That is the trick to sounding level. That is the trick to sounding lively on microphone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
What if you're sitting?
Creepy in person, but lively on my...
you have to sit up. Oh, it still involves the balls. That was terrible, you guys. I'm so sorry. Just want to start this over again. My name is Cole Ross.
See, we already started over like six times. Yeah. So.
Yeah. See, you hear that? My name's Cole Ross, as opposed to, my name's Cole Ross, and you are...
Okay. So let me try this. Okay, so leaning balls on my feet and smile on my face. I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
Hot diggity damn.
It works.
I'm going to lean back here and just kind of frown a bit. And I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Dennis Furia. Okay.
Possession
voice.
What the
voice.
Heck just happened?
I was not smiling and on the balls of my feet.
Yeah, no. It makes all
and
the difference in the world.
You became Batman?
And then if I smile but I'm not on the balls of my feet, I get, I'm Dennis Furia?
Yeah, no. Your body's confused. It doesn't know which way to go.
Very inquisitive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What I've imagined now is just for every inflection, there's a posture, and we're just waving wildly.
Oh, yeah. No, it's that's totally the case. Like, if you are trying to do any kind of voice work, your physical posture does affect the way something sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just imagining Cole publishing a best-selling book, like Interpretive Dance for Voice Acting.
Well, I tweeted about this, but I have this weird situation in my life where once every, like, let's say 2 or 3 weeks, I get an instant message bloop, or somebody comes up to me and says, "Hey Cole, do you have time to come make monster noises for us?"
Wait. Can you make some monster noises now? Like,
I need to be looking at a screen. Like the most recent one was like, you know, laugh monstrously. You know, it's kind of like, oh, okay. I'm not gonna do it.
You can't do that lead in.
You have to do it. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, damn it! I'm gonna wake up the neighbors.
That's pretty good.
Maybe you could do a monster that is trying to be scary but really just wants to be understood.
See, now I'm just turning into Tim Allen.
That's a monster that is kind of scary but really just wants to be understood. It's called man.
It really just wants to be Tim the Toolman Taylor. See, that's the problem when I can't look at a screen. Now I look like a punk. You happy?
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with that.
Okay. Hey, Colo.
Damn it. The hashtag cuts both ways. So we got
literally up twice and then across twice.
Yep.
Live by the call, live by the hashtag, die by the hashtag.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, sure.
Live once by the hashtag. Okay, guys. I was in the middle of saying what the nice people can expect. So news, and then we have some discussion about sequels, and we're going to round out with the things that we have been distracting ourselves with. So do you guys want to get to it?
Let's do it.
Don't rhyme with me. Come on.
No, I wasn't even trying to.
Okay. No, you didn't even know it? Wow. Would you say?
I was a poet. I didn't even think about rhyming.
I hate us. No, I don't. So, oh man, what are we looking at here? This is the brief where we talk about things that are happening in this world around us, especially as regards video games. Does anybody want to volunteer their story to go first?
Did you guys talk about Notch with the Oculus Rift last time?
Yes, we did.
About an hour.
Yeah. Like it was literally the only video game related thing that we talked about. but we did mention it just in kind of the broader virtual reality news, along with every other podcast. So go us. Yeah.
Does anyone else feel like there's not a lot going on in console video games right now, since it's like the year where everyone's making games for the next consoles?
I never stop feeling like that.
Everyone's getting their feet under themselves vis-a-vis next gen. So
yeah, and I kind of, is it too early? Okay, so it's April. GDC was just here recently, but I didn't. You know, that's not really a news event. Like, is it too soon to say that, like, maybe people are holding on to their stuff for E3? Because this is historically, like, after the March glut, kind of a slow time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Titanfall was huge and Dark Souls was huge within its significant niche.
But that's not...
Diablo 3... I mean, I feel like, are we talking releases?
I mean, releases are just stuff that's happening. Like, I don't know. So like to follow up on the Oculus thing, like I'll kind of piggyback on that. So shine on, you crazy diamonds in the video game at people sphere, I guess, because the CEO, or at least a spokesperson, company co-founder Palmer Luckey. Came out and said, yeah, you know what, we expected a negative reaction from people in the short term. Let me see here. We did not expect to be getting so many death threats and harassing phone calls that extended to our families.
Oy.
Yeah. We know we will prove ourselves with actions and not words, but this kind of shit is unwarranted, especially since it's impacting people who have nothing to do with Oculus.
Yes, because truly... the best way to protest a company that you feel violates your privacy is to call people up and threaten their family.
Oh, yeah.
Truly, that is not hypocritical at all.
No, it's not. Well, I mean, it's kind of like, well, if they don't want us to pirate, if they're going to do pirate stuff, I'm going to pirate it anyway. Like, we're dealing with fucking children. Like, yeah. Like, and I know, you know, we weren't, like, incredibly, like, gung-ho about this thing. It was kind of a mixture between, don't care, and that's just a weird thing all around. Like, that was our reaction. But, like, just people are... Every once in a while, and by every once in a while, I mean probably, let's say, tri-weekly.
Yeah, generously.
Yeah. There's something that makes me think, man, this is a, like... When do bad neighbors become bad? You know, when do bad neighbors become a bad neighborhood? Right? Like, it is so just dispiriting to know that these people, you know, not only share the same oxygen that I share, but like call themselves, you know, like I don't call myself a gamer, so that's, you know, that's not the kind of thing. But like nominally, to an outside observer, like we get lumped in with that, you know, simply because we stare at screens.
See, I know. I've always had the theory that there's something where it's sort of like a person who's actually in any particular hobby, know, because they're part of the hobby, they know where to find the not crazy people and how to avoid the crazy people. Therefore, to someone in the hobby, They have a completely different image. Do you know kind of what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like groups self-select. You know, only a shithead is going to tolerate the company of other shitheads. Right.
Well, I guess, like, as example, like for me, like the image of like we kind of talked about this a little bit before, but like I'm really into shooting sports, stuff like that. But like the image of like the gun nut stereotype makes no sense to me, but because like everyone I've ever been around with guns has been like ultra responsible, but I recognize that that's because like I know enough about guns to not be around people that are idiots with guns.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's kind of the same way, where it's like we know enough about video games in order to not be around people who are idiots about video games.
Yeah, and like I would even argue that it's not that we know enough about video games. I would say that, you know, it's because we have enough like social and emotional intelligence.
I don't want
it to come across like a point of like superiority, because like the no true gamer argument is the exact one they make. Like I guarantee that people, you know, a good portion of these death threats probably came from people who are like, Facebook, they're selling our the future of gaming to casuals. Blah. You know, like, you know, die, filthy casual scum is the mantra of a lot of this stuff, you know, at least as far as I've seen on, you know, the gamers.txt thread, right?
Yeah. Well,
the one that surprised me, actually, and not to re-bring up my failed select shift story, but, you know, reading Notch's reason for... you know, not making the game, to a large degree, that's what it was like, you know, Facebook isn't a gaming company, and like, you know, games for Facebook generally don't work because like Facebook will change their, you know, their interface in order to try to get more users. And then, you know, that'll mess up the game or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not even convinced that, like, it's a matter of, you know, oh, now only everybody's going to, like, I think that that's a fallacious argument that, like, oh, Farmville in 3D, bleh. Like,
yeah, see, that's
good.
Let's, just, if I can blend our stories, I think this creates a really, really interesting parallel with the whole game jam thing.
Oh, God.
That went down.
What a fucking nightmare.
So, yeah, I'll give you the brief overview, and then I'll tell you how I think it connects very well to this whole Oculus Rift thing.
We might camp out on this for a little while.
Yeah, but I think it's worth doing. First off, I think overall it's a very positive story.
Oh, yeah.
About the way the gaming community is kind of unified. So basically there was an idea pitch that said, hey, let's show what it's like to do a game jam and to make a game. There's a lot of drama there. There's a lot of excitement there. There's a lot of tension there. Let's do a reality show about it.
There are creative and articulate people who it might be interesting to see their process. Drama. Like the drama they saw was manufactured. But continue. Well, yeah. I'm going to give you notes on your delivery of this story. Yeah. Sorry.
Everything you say is wrong, but continue.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so these, I think it was about 15 indie developers or however many signed on. and came and very quickly realized that what was pitched to them as a reality show about developing games was very quickly turning into like a reality contest in the line of, you know, Survivor or, you know, any of the other kind of lowest common denominator, let's entertain ourselves with the worst of humanity reality shows out there. So
The Apprentice.
Yeah, or The Apprentice. Yeah, it's you know, they weren't interested in telling the story of how a game is made. They were interested in having gamers fight.
Mm-hmm. Having game developers fight.
Exactly. Yeah, excuse me, game developers fight.
I'm sorry.
I would pay to watch gamers fight.
Yeah. You just have to go on the internet. You can get it for free, way more than you could ever want. And so there was one particular I don't know whether to call him director or creative person who was being
it was a producer who was brought in from so they brought in an outside production company that was directly affiliated with Pepsi, specifically Mountain Dew. Yep. So this fucking piece of shit.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, Matty Lesham is who he is. Yeah.
Yeah, and he came in and started asking very hostile questions, cornering people and trying to get them to badmouth their teammates, particularly, and this was kind of the final straw, just really bearing down on people trying to get them to say sexist things mm-hmm. about their female developer counterparts. And the indie developers that were there, to their credit, and just, you know, I'm very proud of the way this went down. Were refused to make any comment about, you know, how having a female developer would be a negative. In fact, all were emphatic that having more points of view is always a good thing. She's a really qualified person. I think she's an asset because she's a skilled developer, not because she's a girl. Mm-hmm. And they just got ground down to the point where they said, this isn't worth it. We won't be a part of this mm-hmm. because of the way you're trying to spin this. And they walked out and just walked away from, you know, I don't know if they were making any money off of the show, but they walked away from a $400,000 project on the principle of we do not want our community to be represented this way.
Yeah.
And man, it fucking awesome. Like mm-hmm. that's great.
Yeah, they were also like really spurious terms. Like in the contract on the way in, they're like trying to get like post commitments. Like, hey, anytime we want to talk to you about this thing, you need to come in and do it. Or like keeping them on the hook for anniversary shows. Like this had the chance of even being that. Also, like the prizes were a Mountain Dew camp chair, or a lifetime supply of Mountain Dew, or free admission to a Mountain Dew ski event, or you know, and then like maybe kind of sorta you'll be given a license to develop on Xbox. We don't know. Fuck it.
But you know, the license. Mountain Dew's jet ski. But the funny thing is that license to develop for Xbox is that's something that all of them either already had or could get for a phone call.
Right.
Like that, it just, and I think the parallel here that I'm going to bring us back around to is they started realizing, hey, this idea might be bigger than any of us thought. And so they brought in an outside party theoretically to help, saying, hey, you don't know games as well, but you're big and you've done this sort of thing before. Mm-hmm. So let's trust you to help run the show. And they completely ruined it just through, in the case of this one producer, outright asinine antagonism, mm-hmm. and then with everyone else involved on the studio side, kind of at best misguided incompetence.
Yeah,
and I see the same thing happening with the Oculus Rift. To bring it back around, this is a VR device that, oh my god, this might be bigger than any of us thought. At first glance, the idea of bringing in a giant tech company with a ton of resources seems like a really good idea and seems to have all these benefits. And we haven't seen the outright antagonism from the Facebook side yet. We've certainly seen it from the fans. Mm-hmm. But I think that misguided incompetence is just as dangerous as the outright antagonism.
I think the misunderstanding might be on the gamer side for the Oculus thing, though, because maybe we're not seeing the bigger picture that they're trying to drive for.
Mm-hmm.
When it's framed up like that, it might just be that like we think, you know, like we're coming in here saying, oh, you know, it's been used only for games so far. Oh, this is a reality show. Therefore, the way we think about it must be the only way to do it. Maybe possibly missing the point. And at that point, like, my objection becomes, like, you know, this thing continues to be irrelevant for me, and especially tempered by my just kind of, you know, always trying to keep Facebook, you know, out of my blind spot, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to let Facebook get behind you. That's not a good idea.
Asking for trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that what I'd say to that is Facebook did not invest $2 billion to let Oculus do their thing. They invested $2 billion because they expect to get at least that back.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but that doesn't – see, I feel like that's just the way things work. I mean, money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
That's fair.
My read on it is just like, I guess my read on it was that a lot of the criticism struck me as just being incredibly naive, idealistic, like, you know, just not recognizing that video games, along with pretty much everything else in any industry, is about business.
And that's fine if Facebook was like, hey, we want to support this as a gaming platform. But again, this kind of their expertise is elsewhere, and they're just going to naturally start guiding this, the Oculus Rift, into areas they have expertise in. And that's just, they might have intentions not to do that, but simply by the virtue of what they are, they're going to start steering it in different directions.
Possibly, but like Facebook isn't the only person or isn't the only entity that is making, the as far as I know, they're not making any of the content for it. Like what is done with it? Like, and they can encourage it and incentivize different kinds of developments, but like what is done with this thing is still very much in the hands of the developers. And, you know, like a time when we will see less of a certain thing is when somebody like Notch backs out of it on moral grounds. But I don't see them blocking any kind of game innovation on it. I see them encouraging stuff other than that. You know, and trying to basically make it as big of a tent as possible, which possibly, you know, dilutes its appeal because, like, there's not quite enough stuff on there for a gamer. And, you know, it strapping a block of plastic to your face probably won't appeal to your little sister, you know?
Yeah.
I see the core like expertise that Facebook is bringing to this is guy who has lots of money. Like I'm not sure it goes any deeper than that. And I also feel like if you look at like a lot of tech companies do stuff like this. I mean, you know, like Amazon was kind of was basically a giant online store before they became one of the biggest players in cloud computing.
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely validity to what you're saying. I just don't think that's the only way it could go down is kind of what I'm saying.
Ben, you were cutting in with something there.
Oh, I heard one interpretation. I was talking about this over the weekend, but one of my friends brought up the point that they also bought Instagram and that didn't really receive any significant changes, and that this could be just a way for them to hedge their bets and make sure that Oculus Rift wouldn't be like the next Facebook for some reason, if that could ever,
do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was an interesting perspective as well.
I mean, it's weird, you know, because of my day job, the profession that, you know, keeps me under a roof. Like I am constantly privy to people talking about like, oh, what's the next big thing, what's the so-and-so, and like just like literally everything is about wearable computing. Is this you know, Facebook's way of trying to get into wearable, like that literally might be the only thing that they're that they're buying here?
That could be.
You know,
maybe I think, like I said, the whatever circumstances, you have to agree that the opportunity for that kind of misguided incompetence has gone from, you know, has increased significantly due to the Facebook purchase.
Yeah.
See, I would actually say the opposite. I think nothing's more dangerous. I think what's really dangerous is a hyper idealistic like indie gamer.
Hmm.
Okay, indie game developer. Are you talking about like the rank and file people who are like, oh my gosh, they're going to talk about Thomas Was Alone today? Or are you talking about can you quantify that? Good.
I would say indie gamers, since they apparently make death threats on your family.
I don't know that it's indie gamers. Fair. I think that it's, you know, I don't know. I literally know nothing. And I'm speaking from a position of ignorance, but like, you know, I was about ready to say, like, it kind of seems to me like just it would be people who are like core gamers.
Indie gamer would make death threats.
I see. Yeah, exactly. So like, so that's why I tempered myself from saying that, because I have nothing to base that on but my own prejudices. So,
yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I think the biggest scenario where Oculus Rift fails is lack of business savvy, which is what Facebook can give them. Yeah. And I guess I'm saying I think that failure due to lack of business savvy is much, much more likely, it seems to me, than failure due to, like, excessive business savvy. I don't know. Smarm.
Like cynical, like, you know, just like this. What I'm afraid of with Facebook is cynicism, you know? Sure. Like, yeah. You know, like, okay, like, just all of a sudden everything is about the bottom line. It was always going to be about that anyway. Like, but, you know, just like crass, you know, just Facebook tends to make things crass, or things associated with Facebook are crass to my sensibilities. So, you know, that, like, that's what I'm afraid of them bringing to it. But,
and where this could just be, I'm an incredibly crass person. So this could just be me, like, projecting that onto this.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, talking about crass, I don't know if there's any argument to be made for the actions of this producer on the game jam thing.
Yeah, no.
We're gonna make sure we don't gloss over that in favor of Oculus Rift.
I mean, it's just asinine is what it is. Like, I don't even know if there's anything you can project onto it. Like, it's trying to take a group of people who are, like, in every aspect of their life, probably just like above this shit, and trying to bring this shit, whatever they're above, like, to them. It's like, no, we're over this, you know, we're not employees at EA, so we don't have like sexism problems, you know, like, like, you know, it's kind of like, whatever, like, we're just here to get the work done, because it was advertised as a game jam, which is okay, let's sit down and like buckle this up and actually like make something. Yeah. And like, you know, you have a guy coming in with an air horn, like, burp, game trailer challenge, make a diorama that explains the appeal of your game in 5 minutes. Go, go, go. Winner gets a Mountain Dew can cozy.
It's like, cool, dude. I'll keep working on my game. Like, you guys can fight over the cozy.
Yeah, it's like we're trying to get something done here, and you're asking me if I think we have an advantage because we have a cute girl on our side, and you're asking the other guy, do you feel like you have an advantage because you don't have a girl on your team? It's like
it seems like I don't know. I feel like I draw the line between like what he was doing like is actually bad.
It hurts humanity? Yeah.
Yeah. What I mean is like I can kind of differentiate or you know, it crosses a line between just like, hey, this is just an asinine dumb thing to do, just like trying to like, you know, make crappy reality TV out of, people actually trying to make a game, versus like actually being harmfully like trying to promote, you know, cause sexist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I have to say,
go ahead.
I guess there's a difference between being like actively negative in what you're doing versus just passively.
It falls down to crassness. It doesn't matter what his intention was. He was still trying to, you know, bait people using these, you know, like, ignorant stances, right?
Yeah,
like, you know, like it, at the worst it's ignorance, and like there's almost no excuse for that.
Yeah And I have to say, I felt a ping of pride when I look at the landscape of everything that's come before, and I say, you know, so they pulled this shit with, you know, Survivor and everyone put up with it. They pulled this shit with The Bachelor. They did it with Love and everyone put up with it. They do it with, you know, fashion design. People put up with it. They do it with cooking and several different shows and they put up with it. And then they tried to do it to game development. And well, those are the people who said, fuck you guys, we're not going to do that.
Well, do you want to know what the difference in all those groups is? Like, except maybe
yes,
the chefs.
Video games are better than love.
No. That's a good joke. However, the difference is none of those groups, except for the indie game developers, are professionals. Like, maybe the chefs, right? But even still, like, you know, yeah, you have Yahoo who picks up the knife and puts barbecue on sushi, and, you know, all of a sudden he's Guy Fieri, right? So, you know, it's like you you're talking to people here to get a job done, not like to win, not like to, you know, like conquer somebody. It's to like make something that you feel comfortable showing to the world, and you walk into it, you know, wide eyed, expecting to, you know, be able to show that process and make something you're proud of, not be stressed out so far that you don't have anything to tap into, not to be like distracted or drawn into petty squabbles, or to have your talent belittled because of what you got between your legs. Like, you know, it's fucking bullshit. And no professional should have to put up with that in any environment, let alone an environment that is being automatically, you know, designed to be hostile to you.
Yeah. What amazes me. Oh, go ahead.
I just, you know, especially, you know, you talk about being professional, you know, especially in, you know, if you read anything about, you know, how video games are developed, and this is true of software in general, but especially video games are just, you know, such team, you know, processes.
Mm-hmm.
You look at, like, for some reason I decide to actually watch the credits of, Saints Row the Third, and there's like 300 people who worked on that.
Oh, for real?
So, so I mean, especially with, you know, this is especially an industry where the people are going to know how to work with people.
Yeah.
You know?
And even indie developers, you never have somebody who's just a lone wolf. This isn't fucking 1980. You don't have people distributing their games on, you know, in Ziploc bags at corner stores. Like, you know, like these are people who are used to collaborating. And like, there's going to be some, you know, drama and like, okay, you know, like it's like, and that would be interesting to have like a genuine place to like, to see like, you know, how those decisions get made. Like, you know, like it would be awesome to see that, but it's just such a mismatch of it's a mismatch of mediums, right? Or media, because I think that this is the same reason, you know, we're not going to get a good broadcast television, you know, game award show. It's the reason why, you know, gaming is equivalent of the, you know, of the Oscars, whether that's the, you know, the IGF or whether that's the, you know, the stuff that's handed out at GDC or DICE, like, you know, that will never become a televised event because televising it turns it into the Spike VGAs.
Yeah.
You know,
So here's the frustrating thing to me is I don't even think it's inherent in this in the medium of like reality TV that this thing was going to implode, because two shows come to mind. There's Biggest Loser and then So You Think You Can Dance.
Ugh.
Both of those. Oh, no, hold on. Stick with me here. Both of those are shows that are they're competitions. You know, they've got the whole gamey side to them, but they are incredibly positive in the way that they attack it. And, you know, they focus very much on the accomplishments and, you know, overcoming adversity and, you know, improving yourself, just overall have a very positive demeanor to them versus the kind of lowest bottom of the barrel stuff that you see on True TV. And so I have seen examples, maybe, you know, game development is not suited to it inherently, but I've seen examples of other things where, you know, in the case of So You Think You Can Dance, they are professionals that are coming to the show for the most part, that, you know, are able to come together and have a competition and still advance their art form in a very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, and again, it's just the people who came to this said, oh, it's gaming. I don't know that. So I'm going to assume that there's not enough substance there to do it positively. I'm going to try to take it negative.
Yeah.
So that's just bewildering to me because there are examples of positive reality TV and positive reality TV contests that have been very successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, again, I just, and I'm sounding like a broken record, but I come back to this, just the lack of familiarity with what they were dealing with was the Achilles heel of this whole project.
Yeah. And, you know, at the risk of dragging this conversation out for longer.
There's nothing else going on in the news. So.
I said, well, I mean, Ben might have something, but like, you know, I like he hasn't spoken yet. but I'm going to have to take your word because I haven't seen those. I have my own problems with The Biggest Loser, I look at something like Kitchen Nightmares, right? You know, Gordon Ramsay, you know, seems like a pretty solid dude, you know, if not a little bit angry, but he, you know, he's there to help, right? Mm-hmm. You look at the BBC version compared to the American version, and it is night and day. Because of taking this show about turning a small business around and like adapting it, it's pretty much the same like subject matter, but making it about the quick cuts and the sound effects and this dude screaming and cutting away kind of the positive parts of like, if you don't do this, you know, your business is going to fail in 2 months. Right. Mm-hmm. Like and taking away kind of, you know, just, you know, that by taking that part of the show away, which is like why I watch the British version, you know, to see people turn their lives around or to watch them be really stubborn and refuse to fix themselves. And it's like, OK, we tried to help you, but oh, well. And then to see American reality television, you know, which really sets the standard, you know, tropes applied to it that turns it into something entirely different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bleh.
I did like the episode where he just told the viewers, like, don't eat at this restaurant.
Well, yeah, because they had rotting food.
Oh, no. The one I was thinking of was the one where the people, like, the owners, like, confiscated all tips.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're talking about Amy's Bakery.
Oh, was that one?
Yeah, that was a good one.
See, ooh, Amy's Bakery.
If you're going to watch reality TV You owe it to yourself in general. You owe it to yourself to watch Whisker Wars. It's on Netflix.
Beers?
It's basically like, think of like any of the reality TVs that like, you know, it's following along, you know, this competition, you know, like following the various people, except it's people who are into professional beard competitions.
Riveting.
It's actually like truly like you can watch it in like a night, you know. It was like on like 2 seasons. It's fairly short. It's actually really kind of interesting.
I guess the one thing I want to say to cap it off before we get to Ben, if he has a story, I don't want to lose the fact that I think, you know, there was a lot of shit that swirled around on this thing, but ultimately it is a positive story. And like I said, I came away kind of proud with how things turned out.
Yeah.
Now,
so it's, yeah.
Were these people that like, were these big name people, like, have they done games like that I would recognize? Or
yeah, yeah. So the biggest one that you're probably going to recognize is Davey Reedon. Who was a developer on the Stanley Parable. I think one of the main guys behind it. Zoe Quinn, the aforementioned. She's a girl developer. She's either an asset or a liability. Let's call attention to her. She did Depression Quest, which is an amazing Twine game. And then there's Robin Arnott and Adriel Wallach, who did games that I'm aware of but haven't played, called Sound Self and Candescent, respectively. So, like, these are, you know, relatively big. They're not like, oh, we made Portal, but they're, you know, names that are known, right?
Just because this would be particularly unfortunate if this was, you know, someone's potential breakout thing.
Oh, yeah.
That just got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So to a certain degree, it's kind of like, I'm glad it happened to these people. Does that make sense?
I mean, maybe. Like at that level, any kind of exposure is going to be a break.
True, so. But I mean, it's at least people that, like, you know, when they walked away from this, weren't potentially being like, okay, now I'm not going to get, you know, or at least are less likely to it to be, now I'm not going to get to make my game at all.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because they probably, by walking away from this, got more cred than they would have if they stuck it through.
Mm-hmm. That's
true. Yeah. Speaking of walking away from it, I want to hear predictions. Do you think this will end the Microsoft Mountain Dew partnership?
I don't know. No, I think I don't think so.
Dude, if Microsoft wants to put everything right, well, no, I won't say that. But if Microsoft wants to earn a lot of points in my eyes, I could see them saying, "Hey, we heard about the crap you guys were pulling on this, and we're not cool with that."
Yeah,
that would be. I mean, again, for like crass like marketing type thing, that actually would be kind of. I know that seems way too savvy for Microsoft.
Yeah, you, like,
doing the right and savvy thing. That's not Microsoft.
That, you know, but like that beverage money is oh so sweet, just like way too sweet. Like, why do you have that beverage money in your mouth? Spit it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to give you a cavity.
Yeah, no, that beverage money is killing Kentucky. You realize that, right?
What?
Oh, yeah. Well, at least their teeth.
Yeah.
Followed by their people.
Yeah. Ben, do you have a story?
I do. So I should have laughed earlier. Let me send it to you. I was surprised we didn't cover this, but maybe not. I don't know. Arkham Origins is having a DLC with Mr. Freeze. I'm pretty sure I haven't talked about this.
I think it's come up maybe once or so before.
Okay.
Yeah.
As a side note, please do not spoil the previous Mr. Freeze fight that is apparently amazing.
Yep, okay. I will not, because this is a prequel.
Okay. I will spoil it in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get it or not, but I just thought I'd draw attention to it. It's coming out end of April, so within the month.
Yeah. So. I bought Arkham Origins over the weekend because the Square Enix was running a deal. I think it was like $10. Okay. I was like, you know, I picked up all the other Arkham games to get them on my... So basically, every Steam sale becomes an opportunity for me to replace a game that I own on Xbox.
Yes.
If I have the opportunity to like to hawk that up into Cleed, then I'm going to do that. So
yeah.
But it's Arkham Origins cold heart. I wonder if they're gonna it pulls from the TV series, from the animated series. I wonder if they're going to try and make it similar to the one from City, right?
I don't know.
Oh, well, yeah.
There's just a teaser trailer out, I believe. My cursory Googling has only revealed that. So
okay.
It's exciting. It's always good to see a good thing get more good stuff. Well, I guess Arkham Origins was an okay thing. Good stuff.
That wasn't.
You know,
good.
I'm just gonna strike that. I'm just gonna strike that sentence.
Yeah,
This
is just a thing.
Here's a question for you, Ben. As somebody who likes the Arkham games, or two-thirds of them, and dislikes DLC, have any of the Arkham games had any good DLC? Because most of what I've seen has been either mission packs or costumes. And as cool as it would be to run around as Batman from Batman Beyond, I don't see that as being like a thing that makes me hope that a mission for this game would be any good.
Yeah, I believe, I don't know if there was a DLC for the first game. I know with the second one there was like a Harley Quinn DLC where you did a mission as her. But I don't think there was one for the first one. So I've was not. It? What?
I thought the Catwoman and slightly less nerdy Robin, whatever he becomes, I thought that was DLC.
I don't know. It came with the game if you bought it. I don't know if you needed to pre-order it or not. So I played that one, but for some reason I didn't consider it DLC since it came with the game.
Okay.
But, yeah. So I don't know. I don't even know if I'll get it or not. I just wanted to bring attention to the fact that it is coming out. So.
Yeah.
Cool. I would love to see, as a side note, the next game in the series they make be... like Arkham Batman Beyond.
Oh, they've already announced it with the next game.
Yeah. It's coming out in like October or so. So the one after that, maybe.
Yes. So the one after that. The next unannounced one.
Let's see here. So let's move on to the multiplayer, why don't we?
Multiplayer.
It is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you respond to it. Why am I talking like a crazy person? I always do that. Oh, God, what's wrong?
Are you standing on the balls of, like, only 1 foot, maybe?
Yeah, I know. It's putting me off balance.
It's pretty... Are you only half smiling?
I'm smirking. So let's see here. This was a question that was dumped into our little spreadsheet by Dennis, but I took the liberty to put it up this afternoon, which is, we asked you, what game sequel was the biggest improvement over the original? And there were some answers.
It's not a
dramatic pause.
Yeah, so let's see here. Ben, what did Quentin say?
Quinn said, I would have to say Crash Bandicoot 2. I recently played through the first three games in the series, and I realized how rough around the edges Crash 1 was. Whether it be odd level geometry, honestly, I couldn't reach that a second ago. Dodgy collision detection, or the fact that you could only save at the end of a bonus level if you finished it. Crash 1 had some odd quirks. Crash 2, however, really seemed to have some polish to it. Imaginative level design, warp room level select, plenty of secrets to find and unlock, and solid controls for a 3D D-pad game. Overall, you get the sense that Naughty Dog had learned from the first game and knew what to do for this one. I would like to add on to this, because my answer is Uncharted 2. Because... And perhaps this was a harsh transition because I played the second one first and the first one second, but maybe it's just the second one's just such a good game, man. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that was my immediate answer as soon as I read this question.
Yeah, definitely. Does that jive with your experience, Dennis?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually came in both cases, so I wholeheartedly agree on Uncharted 2 versus Uncharted 1. I came to Crash Bandicoot 2 first. So that was the first game in the series that I played, and then, you know, went and found the first one thinking to be more of the same, and it was definitely a big step back. He's basically a Dorito man. So graphically it is a hard step back. And then there is lots of just weird stuff with the game. You know, it felt like an early PlayStation 1 game. Excuse me. So that was it was very obvious that it came from earlier in the cycle. And I think especially on the PlayStation 1, there was a, you know, over the life of the console, there was a big difference in the quality of just graphics and games overall. So yeah. it was very apparent in the Crash Bandicoot series. I've never played Warped or any of the later ones, so
yeah. I'd be interested to see.
I've heard so, yeah.
Huh. It'd be impossible to play now, but...
Yeah, it was good in 1990.
Yeah. David, what's Phil say?
Phil says, one sec, I need to expand this. Phil says, as much as the series is frowned upon, I'd have to say Dynasty Warriors. The original was a mediocre fighting game. To take that and turn it into a large-scale hack and slash was the major change, which worked well with the characters in the story. I guess I did not realize that the original game wasn't always like the huge, like, you know, let's recreate Red Cliff.
Yeah, totally. Thing.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's the idea that a sequel can turn it into a different genre, which I'm sure if I thought harder, I would probably be able to identify another example of that. But
Resident Evil 4.
Yes, that's probably true. I was going to say almost like Resident Evil 2 as well, because that was more action-oriented than the first one. But 4 definitely changed the tenor and set the series on a different track.
Yeah, I would say, are we doing read one and then do ours?
Yeah, go ahead and do yours.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I would say... this one's hard for me because I tend not to play a ton of sequels. I would say even though I didn't play either game much, Jak and Daxter, the second one seemed a lot different, definitely, and kind of an improvement. I know, Dennis, you were kind of a big fan of those. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great example. I think we talked about it. Man, I don't know what's up with my throat. We talked about either last week or 2 weeks ago just how the Jak 2 exceeds my expectations in so many ways the first time I played it, and those expectations were set by Jak 1. So it manages to keep the core gameplay elements that were good while adding a whole bunch of other great stuff. So
I'm noticing a pattern with Naughty Dog games.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I love the second game. So, dude, I can't imagine what the second Last of Us is going to be.
So the other one that comes to mind for me, and this is sort of weird because to a large degree it could be considered kind of a continuation of the first, was Max Payne 2. I don't know if any of you guys played it, but you know, they're both pretty good, you know, both really good games, but the first Max Payne game was just, it was much too difficult for its own good, and particularly it tended to be difficult in very, like, finicky ways. Whereas the second one, like, made you much more powerful, particularly in terms of its bullet time. It was just a lot more fun. And it was sort of one of those things where when it didn't, like, constantly make you, when it gave you more to play with, you actually played with what you had smarter. It also did a really good job of, like, riffing off of a lot of the elements of the previous games, or the previous game, and used that to make its storyline better. So,
Yeah, I can see that. I've never played it, but I've heard very similar things.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Moving on here, Murph said, have you ever seen Street Fighter 1?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that might be the best example, actually.
Didn't we talk about, I forget what context it was in, I can't remember if I was listening to the conversation or participating in it, but it had, like, analog sensitive buttons that were, depending on how.
Yeah, we were talking about unique control methods.
Yeah, there we go. Yep.
Yeah, and people were talking about, like, the analog, like, puffy buttons.
Nice. Well, and wasn't Street Fighter 1 like all you versus the computer?
Yes. At least so far as I saw. I'm looking at the cabinets right now. Let me see here. No, they have two input things. So
see, I thought it was two players, but it was always still you guys versus the computer. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. Yeah, so I've not done enough research on it to know, but I did some, you know, I did watch a YouTube video of it, and yeah, it is a janky mess. Yeah, it's real bad. I mean, to follow the pattern, I'll do mine. So this is like a tough one because, like, you know, there are like obvious examples I could probably throw out. Silent Hill 2, Mass Effect 2, like two of my favorite games that are sequels to other things. But the original one was already like pretty good, right? Like in both of those instances, I would even say the same for like Rock Band 2, right? For all the functionality that added. And, sure. Like, for how much it is, like, just a much better game than the first one. Like, the first one was still, like, pretty singular. And it set out, it did what it set out to do in a really good way. And so, keeping it kind of in the modern sphere, I would actually say Assassin's Creed 2.
Oh, yeah.
Just because, like, it fulfilled the promise of, like, we're going to give you this world, but also, like, a really cool story inside of it. And also, like, neat stuff to do. So actually,
was
like
that
making
the
it
Italian
a,
one.
Yeah, that's the one that takes place in like Venice and Florence and like all these cities. Like it was just more interesting and textured and like had more personality to it. And you know, like in a lot of ways, it felt like a 3D Link to the Past a little bit. You know, just in the way that stuff kind of like fit together. So yeah, like I would say Assassin's Creed
turned into a bunny rabbit.
Yeah.
I did not get to that part. Was that? Assassin's Creed 2, was that the first one to include multiplayer, or was it one of the, like, they did a bunch of third ones?
Brotherhood was the one you're thinking of.
Brotherhood, okay.
Yeah. But Brotherhood was great, too, but, like, that wasn't as much of a step, because, like, Assassin's Creed 1 is virtually unplayable because of its incredibly repetitive loop, right?
Yeah, it's... Assassin's Creed, they put together an engine and forgot to add a game, and yeah. Assassin's Creed 2, they added the game.
Right. Yeah, that's something to say, Ben?
Well, yeah, and then they took the game away for the third one.
Oh, man.
We gave you the game, and we can take it away, damn it.
Yeah. Dennis, what's Robert say?
Robert says to bring up WoF, Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. It took the previous games and made perfection.
Yeah, it's really hard to argue with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I'm not going to either.
There's a whole episode dedicated to that if you want to shuffle on over to WoF.
Yeah.
Am I correct? That's the bunny rabbit one. Yeah, like, yeah. Correct? Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So mine's a little bit gimmicky, so you can tell me I'm cheating, which is the World of Warcraft versus the previous Warcraft games.
I actually considered that one. Yeah, I think that totally applies.
Justify it for me.
I think it's identifying the elements of the game that made it cool or had potential, and then just maximizing those to the nth degree to something that is clearly lived... and stood the test of time.
Yeah. Also, I think you could also make a case if we sort of, again, cheated and argued that World of Warcraft is a sequel to EverQuest.
Huh.
I think it also kind of flies in terms of, you know, taking EverQuest and making it actually a much better game, regardless of what it might have lost.
Yeah, maybe. So that's my cheaty answer. Really, as we were discussing all these things, like the multiplayer in Assassin's Creed and Rock Band 2, was Rock Band 2 the first one to have online play?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so those in particular, I think there's a lot of games that, you know, were right around that time when online play was starting to hit its stride before it became this must-have that every game shovelware it in. That it was just really, really cool to take these franchises that you loved and imagine what it would be like to play those with people over the internet. Like that whole suite of games that came out in that time was a really exciting, new world. I remember the third Ratchet and Clank game was the first one to have online multiplayer. And it's the first game I can think of that had this, you know, third person shooter and platformer perspective built really well into an arena combat kind of situation.
Yeah.
Nice.
So there's just, and that's, I think that's more a function of the period of time that games came out in versus any specific game. So I'll call attention to that as well.
Yeah.
Actually, can I throw two more in just because
why not?
You now made me think of that would be the first Modern Warfare game and Burnout Paradise.
Burnout Paradise is a really good one. That is a really good answer.
Gosh, just saying the name of it makes me want to go back and play it.
Yeah. So we have a dangling one here, and let's see here. Who was the first one to go? I forget.
This guy.
Yeah, Ben, go.
Yeah, Christopher Schley says, gotta go with Mario for a lot of them. Super Mario Bros. 3 and Super Mario World tie for being leagues better than the original, or perhaps streets ahead, if you will. when it comes to the Mario RPG-style games, I love Paper Mario series, including Super Paper Mario on the Wii. And when it comes to 3D Mario, those damn Super Mario Galaxy games end up being some of my favorite Mario of all time, right up there with 3 and World. Also, as a bonus, as much as I love Maniac Mansion, I always felt that Day of the Tentacle improved upon it for me, at least in regards to its comedic writing and, well, I dug the cartoony LucasArts graphical style.
Yeah.
And I felt like such a badass kid every time Hoagie said bitchin', every time I clicked on something.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I'll love anything with time travel as a subject over anything that's not. Tales Back to the Future game is at least better than the NES game. Take that, probably correct haters.
Well, yeah. Oh, man. I mean, like, doing your taxes is better than a swift kick in the teeth.
Yeah. Well, are we sure about this?
Jeez.
Let's just say we could put together, like, an ET game that was better than the original, so...
You know, I think that game gets shit on.
Yeah. I know nothing about it. I just know it's bad.
Yes, and that's exactly the problem.
Yeah.
People think, the Friday the 13th game is bad. Like, have you played it? Because it's, like, not that bad.
See, but I feel like when the company that made it felt the need to bury all known copies of it.
That's a myth. That's a myth.
I don't know. Have you dug up the entire desert to prove it? He was an inside job, man. Yeah.
No, I was out there trying to disprove something. All I found was a negative. Or trying to prove something. I don't even know. That was a shitty attempt at a word and logic joke. So
logic and joke don't really belong together. Yeah. But continue.
Nope, I'm out.
Yeah.
Tippity tap.
So, Ben, yeah. Were you saying something?
Good.
I was asking if Ben was saying something.
No. I'm done here.
I work here as fast.
So thank you, everybody, for participating in that. If you would like to be a part of the discussion, hang around on our Facebook page. That is facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. Sometime around like Tuesday afternoon, that's when the prompt goes out. And you can see that there. And we really, really appreciate everybody throwing in.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm ready to talk about some games. I actually have some this week.
All right.
Nice.
Let's talk about it. Us.
The grind.
Now it's time. Good.
We actually have content for the show this week.
We have plenty of content. Last time was one of my favorite episodes we've done. Not because it was sad that David wasn't here. However, it was fun just kind of like fucking around for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see here. We're here to talk about games most of the time, and this week is different. I was about to say is no different, but it actually is different. We're here to say these things. I don't want to ask if anybody wants to volunteer to go first.
I have something short, so I can go first.
Good.
If that's okay. Since I made this complaint before, there's not a lot of games out that I've been playing and not a lot of games out that I've wanted to play, even though there are some games out. So I've been replaying The Last of Us, surprisingly. So Dennis, was what you said before. I can't wait to see what they do with the sequel. The game is really awesome. So it's just a really good game. But I've already spoken about it, so that's all.
Is it still holding its emotional punch since you know what's coming?
I guess this time more what I've noticed or what I've been looking at is kind of like the details and the art of the setting, and when I pass by like a cubicle setting, I'll kind of inspect all the like kid drawings that are posted to a cubicle or things like that, just to see like the details of that, and then also trying to pay attention to when they cut you off from certain areas, like when they kind of change what places you can access to, since you're always kind of jumping down from a ledge or going through a barricade of some kind.
Yeah.
So just kind of paying attention to what they do that. So that's more. So I haven't really been paying attention as much to the story since I'm pretty familiar with it, but.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, what's cool though is like you have all these like memories of like what happened. You're like, oh, there was that great part, and then there was that great part, and then there was that great part, and you just and you just go from great moment to great moment. You know, like it moves surprisingly quickly just because it's just back to back great moments.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say I'm thinking of Pittsburgh specifically since that's the city that I was last in. But yeah.
I think I mentioned I was replaying it before Dark Souls, so that got truncated right as I was getting to Pittsburgh. The one thing I really noticed, I played through it on the Survivor difficulty, which is the hardest one. It takes away your listen mode. It really restricts all your resources, and it you get killed super fast. You have no health. And it's interesting to see the game change to play like a puzzle game. And so, it's almost like, I've heard people describe challenge runs on Dark Souls where it's like, okay, this is now a puzzle game. I have to figure out how to kill these enemies before they get to me or, sneak past them. And it's a very different way to play the game because the way I'd played it before was very much, when you mess up, you brawl your way out. And that felt very The Last of Us-y. You know, that was, you know, that felt very true to what the game was going for. But now I don't have that option, and so it's interesting to play it as a puzzle game.
Yeah, is it now like a throw bricks and glass bottles puzzle game where it's like how to get them over in one corner so you can run around them and hope they don't see you?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Which just makes it very obvious how oblivious enemies are to your AI partners.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not really a factor anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what have you guys been playing?
I will go because I have four, but some of them are pretty small.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I went on kind of a kick. So I've revamped my my backlog strategy.
So again.
So I decided the old way wasn't getting anything done, wasn't really sane. So I decided the more sane thing to do would be to attach things to walls.
Oh, of course. Yeah, everyone knows that.
Yeah, right? That shows mental soundness. No. So, I'm not motivated by seeing a stack get smaller, I guess. Here's the theory, the hypothesis, right? Mm-hmm. I might not be motivated by watching a stack get smaller because the stack is so big. However, watching a stack get bigger or a collection of things get bigger, i.e., the list of games I've completed, might actually motivate me. You got to post more up on the wall, right? So. In my apartment, there is one long hallway, and one side of it is concrete, painted concrete. It's not like I'm living in a basement, but it's concrete, so there's nothing I can do with it aside, actually putting up any kind of art. However, I do have index cards and I have scotch tape, so I've looked at the games I've beaten this year, and I've pulled out the cards from their respective places, and I just have a 2014 column, and every time I beat something, I'm going to put it up on the wall.
Nice.
Yeah.
So then basically your wall is going to end up looking like some conspiracy theory-esque thing.
Like I said, the
You're
only sane man
out.
In the room.
You just need to get, like, twine and, like, connect random games.
Oh, yeah.
So you're doing it with just the index card. You're not using, like, an image of the box art or anything like that.
Just the index card.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that is just an aside. And, you know, I started it this weekend, and I have four games to talk for, so that might be a thing. Yeah. So let's start out with one that's kind of breezy, Proteus. Which is a first-person exploration game. It's kind of like Minecraft, except there's nothing to do.
Wait, what?
So you're walking
around. How do you beat it?
Well, you don't. You just walk around until you're done seeing stuff. It's actually kind of a neat little experience. I'm happy that I got it in, like, a Humble Bundle because it's, you know, like there is a little bit of game to it. And, like, oh, that's an interesting sound because, like, so it's 3D, but everything kind of has the graphical fidelity of, like, a 2600 game.
Okay.
Different things make different sounds. So it's kind of, it has a day-night cycle, and you're walking around trying to see as much. So, like, here's a little bunny, and here are some birds, and, you know, here's some, you know, rocky outcroppings that make different noises. And so you almost get into this meditative, empty-headed state where you are just kind of, like, seeing what's around the next, like, over the next hill or something like that. And as you're going, it kind of creates this natural ambient soundscape. And it just looks pleasant, too. It's like a bunch of pastels and, you know, Atari 2600 colors. And, you know, part of your goal, like if there is, you know, a way to beat this, is to, at nighttime, a portal appears somewhere in the woods.
And, as it does.
Yeah, yeah. And when you go through it, you're on the same island, but it advances the season. So it's like, oh, different stuff shows up in different seasons. So I just kind of walked around until I saw all the different seasons. And it's like, I've beaten this.
Nice.
Yeah.
This probably falls into the long list of games that I think would be really good as screensavers.
Yeah.
Like if I could just have an AI, maybe, you know, a Roomba AI attached to your character in Proteus and have
Which
that run.
Roomba plays.
Yeah, oh, Roomba plays Twitch.
Oh, you control it with Skittles.
We each have their own individual sound.
Yeah.
But that I always think of the maze from like Windows 95.
Fuck. You straight up like goosed my steez here because because I was gonna say talk about games that would be better as screensavers. Fucking screensavers that would be better as games. I would go to I would go to Radio Shack or Sun Electronics and like stand there staring at the screen staring at the screensaver trying to solve this maze. And it's like, no, you dumbass! I want to play this game. Like I want to do it. I want to do it first person maze.
You turned right.
Yeah.
When did screensavers stop being a thing?
LCDs.
They were still around for a while. Like
they needed no more saving after that.
Yeah.
I know. It was one of those weird things that like I woke up in the middle of the night like a week or two ago. I'm like, wait a minute. My laptop doesn't have a screensaver.
Oh no. I've been living so dangerously. That was funny.
Yeah. I've also thought it'd be interesting if you could just get like, I mean, now that Twitch is a thing, just get a stream of, you know, like the, you know, most recent kills in Titanfall or something, which again, screensavers aren't really a thing anymore, but I'd be interested just to have that on a little window somewhere.
I would just find that so incredibly distracting.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what screensavers were too.
I suppose. Look at those toasters.
At the ball, it's going to hit the corner. Oh, it hit the corner perfectly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Only 5 hours until it does it again.
So like Proteus, you probably have it because it was in a bundle. Like I would say, listen, you know, like dedicate your attention to it for as long as it can hold your attention, and then just feel happy putting it away, because exactly as much is there as is on the surface. Huh. So it's an interesting little experiment. Yeah. Second one, talking about interesting little experiments, Flappy Golf.
But what?
Flappy Golf. So it is from the developers of Super Stickman Golf. Super sweet, right? Mm-hmm. Except instead of being a golf game where you have a little power meter and aiming, you control with Flappy Bird controls.
Oh, no.
So you press the right side of the screen to give it like diagonal velocity upward and to the right. And you tap the left side of the screen to give it diagonal velocity upward and to the left. And your par is the number of flaps that it takes to get you to the hole.
Oh,
and it's all the courses from Super Stickman Golf.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's free. Like there are ads; wow. They're kind of obnoxious, but yeah, it's kind of funny. Like I am surprisingly hooked on this weird little remix. Yeah,
That's funny that they would just take the levels and it fits so well. Because normally, if you asked me, like, hey, do you think the Stickman Golf levels would work with a completely different mechanic? I would say, oh, like, no, you'd probably have to design something for it. But that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, holes from Super Stickman Golf that I've memorized are exactly the same, so I have no reason to believe they've altered them at all. I mean, and the way that I don't know how they calculated par, but it seems to be, seems to work really well. So it's obviously thought out, like, oh, you know, the gold should be them figuring out this is the line they should take as opposed to, you know, so-and-so.
What are some of the pars on the holes?
They range anywhere from like 5 to 14.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah. But I'll
make sure you keep installed so that when it's inevitably pulled off the market.
So here's the thing. We're recording this on April 1st. It's going to be, later than that when people hear it. But, the internet is just a barren hellscape of humor on April 1st because everybody's like, it's the Google toaster, it's the Gawker toaster, it's everything's toasters, right? And this year
toasters all the way down,
fucking everything is Flappy Bird. Do any of you have an original thought in your gotten?
EA's April Fool's Day joke.
What was
which
that?
Was
we're going to develop games for Wii U. That truly was their April Fool's Day joke.
Ooh, that's deep cut. That is mean spirited.
I don't know.
Kitty
I thought
got claws.
It was funny.
Wow.
They've apparently apologized, but I thought
yeah,
it was
that
funny.
Can't be good for their relationship with Nintendo.
I don't know. Maybe that's kind of what Nintendo needs to hear is quit putting out dumb systems. But
that's a wake up. I don't know. So yeah, Flappy Golf, it's neat for free, you know, whatever. I've also play Super Stickman Golf because that game is sweet.
So wait, I'm now confused. Is April Fool's joke or is real thing?
Is real thing.
Okay.
No. I was grousing because like Sega's was Flappy Bird and Blizzard's was Flappy Bird. It was just okay. A, stop doing April Fool's because it is literally a thing for babies. And B, like it just the first thing that you think of. I'm guilty of using the first thing I think of in a lot of places. But like you can tell that like the first thing a lot of people thought of was Flappy Bird, and that's what they went with.
There was no depth of thought to it.
Yeah.
I did enjoy also the ministry I'm involved with on campus. They have like their thing that's like their big like 4 points that's like you know reading scripture, like their whatever their things. They sent out a press release that they added a fifth point, which was playing Ultimate Frisbee as a central way to connect with God. Mm. I thought that was kind of funny.
That's college.
Yeah.
Huh. Good.
I was going to say, I don't know how to do April Fool's jokes without being incredibly dark. I think some people on the podcast hate the New Girl, but it's like Winston from New Girl, who just doesn't know how to do pranks without going either way too over the top or way too dark. Mm. But my best April Fool's pranks have all had, I think, Jen ready to drive to the hospital to like bail me out, and me going like, I don't want to ruin your April Fool's, babe. And her being like, no, I'm on my way. It'll be okay. And I'm like, babe, I don't want to ruin your April Fool's. I'll be fine. It's April Fool's. No, I'm on my way. Okay, maybe I need to stop doing this.
maybe that's not the thing to joke about.
Yeah, so I need to. I have abstained again, also because it is a thing for babies. But I have abstained this year because,
Jen, honey, I'm pregnant.
Yeah,
like that should be your joke.
I wonder, I'm going to have a baby. How many people find out that they're pregnant on April Fool's Day?
Oh, like a statistically. Like significant number, I suppose.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So moving on to the third one here, and this might be like the rare example of a game that I actually like straight up hate.
Ooh. Not even flawed in an interesting way.
I would say that. And okay, so it's an iOS game, and I'm sorry to like dump those in. I know that's a pet peeve for people who listen to video game podcasts. All they talk about is iOS games. That's not the case for us, but I have two of them. Deal with it. I'm so sorry, but this one is.
Those two statements don't work. You deal with it, and I'm so sorry. Don't belong next to each other.
With all due respect,
Colo. It's a way of life, you guys. I'm not trying to force it, but the scriptures are being drafted. No, please don't draft those scriptures. I am very, very afraid to see what somebody would come up with for Colo.
And yet, you have to know.
God, no, I don't want.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
So it's a game for iOS called Sometimes You Die. Okay. And like on its
prepare for it.
On its surface. Like it seems okay, right? So it's a platformer, like a puzzle platformer. It kind of, you know, mimics Limbo a little bit too much with its, you know, soft focus and monochrome black and white kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It has an interesting mechanic that is a little bit like Swapper, but a little bit more on the nose about it, which is that you're a little cube, and every time you die, you leave your little corpse behind, your little cube corpse. And you can use that as a, you know, like as a way to get around the obstacle that killed you. So say there's a bed of spikes that you can't quite jump over. You would die several times to leave a little like platform of bodies so that you can use that to jump to the next place. Something like that, right?
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. So there it is. And if it was just that, if it was just kind of like, you know, here's this thing. Dying matters because it changes the environment in a non-trivial way, and you have to use that, that would be perfectly fine. However, it is possibly the most obnoxious and confrontational, and I would say almost like junior high, like oh man, this is a thing people do in video games, is talk about how crazy video games are. Like, art, like semi-artistic, pseudo-artistic tone, which is like, isn't it fucked up that you're dying? What are you doing this for? To see a number at the end? You know, have you thought about those cubes? Have you thought about your life? Maybe I'm manipulating you. Maybe I'm making it so you can die. Maybe I'm making it so you have to die. And like, it tells it in an interesting way, because each of like the nine like worlds has like a theme that is overlaid on top of it. Not overlaid on top of it, but like, you know, like it has a different name. And like in the background, there are like there's like this big collection of letters. And as you go from screen to screen, like new ones are highlighted to make words. So it's like a word search that like reads off one of these sentences, which again would be fine if it wasn't like straight up like the Stanley Parable. Except, oh, the Stanley Parable was actually thought-provoking, and this is more like, it's weird that we consider death to be trivial. Think about what you're doing. And I feel bad because somebody like worked really hard to make this game, but it's just so tone-deaf that like I have to like bring this to bear and say, like, there's a way to do games about games, like, right? Again, the Stanley Parable, okay? Or Spec Ops, right? Like, even sure. Spec Ops got, like, leaned a little bit too far, but that had enough pathos, and, like, it leaned into it and said, like, oh, like, you know, here's what happens when you inhabit the heart of darkness, right?
Yeah.
But, like this is, like, it's almost like it's pure wood paneling. Like, they're, like, it has a semblance of an idea behind it, and I feel almost insulted because I don't think it earned what it was doing, because it came right out the gate. It was, like straight. It was like a straight pitch from beginning to end. And that was just a real bummer.
I draw skulls on my Trapper Keeper.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw it away. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So like, you know, and it, like, there's some interesting payoff. Like, you know, like, the, like there's a, like the refrain is, are you doing this to see a number? Are you doing this to see a number? And then at the end it says, oh, you died 288 times. Think about it.
Drop the microphone.
That's my new thing. I'm just gonna add "think about it" to the end of new phrases. Yeah. Think about it,
Colo. Think about it.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. Like, it's not a bad game. Like, there are some interesting puzzles, and you know, like, to a certain extent, you should be able to divorce a game's trappings to like what you're actually doing, but it was just so obnoxious to my sensibility. I don't know. Am I off base? Like, am I just like tearing down this independent developer who like thought he had a profound thought and like put this thing out for the world to see?
I feel like that's how I read basically all video games as art. So
I would have to play it to see.
And I think that there's a difference between having a profound thought and saying, like, wouldn't this be profound? Like, there's a lot to do with the way you express your thought. There's a difference between saying, like, hey, we all die. Think about it. And then having some sort of artistic exploration of that idea. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's you need to have the idea, but you also need to have an interesting exploration of the idea for there to be merit.
And like, I think that there needs to be a movement, you know, like maybe you start out with it and then like this creeps in. Maybe maybe that would have been less offensive to me than if it just like started on it. And it's like, oh boy, you're going to die. Think about what that means. And we're going to keep hitting the same. Yeah, you know, I think it's the monotony that gets to me. Like a little bit, like, you know, like start out with a bait and switch, like, oh, here is like a geometric puzzle platformer, like every other indie game is, and like and you know, just make it so, you know, and even just make it so it's like just like, you know, jumping from place to place, and then like there's a spot where you have to die, and it's like, wait, what's this? Your box is still on the screen. That's weird. And then you go along, and then it's all, and then all of a sudden you find situations where you have to do it, and it's like, think about that. And then, like, just if that crept in, that would be such a more tactful way to approach it. Am I off base?
Would it ever need to tell you, think about this? That's the part that seems really crass to me.
I don't even know that it says think about this. But like it just it repeats it so much that it's like there's a message here. Get it?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think a good rule of thumb is read any profound dialogue using the voice of Keanu Reeves, and if it still seems like a good idea, you're probably all right.
Okay, so now we need to get a Kickstarter to have have Keanu Reeves read the works of Plato, specifically The Republic. Yeah.
Is it if I just kickstart, like, you know, hang out with Sean Connery, is he legally obligated to then hang out with me if I make my goal?
Yeah, no, it's internet law.
Like I need to raise $100 so Sean Connery will hang out with me. This is the reward. And then he has to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, everything on Kickstarter is contractually binding. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you were to hang out with Sean Connery, you should watch the next Bond movie that you would watch, and then just talk shit about that Bond with him.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
George Lazenby, what the hell, man? That guy. Yeah, so I don't know. Like my instinct is to hedge and say, like, obviously somebody worked very hard on this. And kudos to you for participating. However, I, as a person who doesn't make games, can identify a ton of things that, oh, it would have been super easy to change this. But, like, just reacting to this and holding my experience true, I basically hate finish this game.
You don't beat me. I beat you.
This app isn't on this iPad with me. I'm not on this iPad with this app. This iPad is in here with me. I always get that backwards and fuck up the delivery and end up looking like a punk. Blah.
So did you put it up on your wall?
Oh, yeah.
Ah, good man.
So finally, kind of in the Games About Games realm, I sat down on Sunday and I played through all of Thomas Was Alone.
Yay!
Yeah. That is a delightful game. It is a fantastic study in identity and simplicity. I love the themes. Even after its turn, which is kind of controversial for a lot of people, I think that its themes, you know, still hold. And yeah, it is very well presented and put together. It sounds like I'm damning with faint praise, but it's fantastic, and it was worth the 5 hours or so that I put into it to experience it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to say shameless plug. It's on the most recent episode of Check It Out, Comrade.
Yes, this
is
true.
I listened to it. They did it justice. It was a good episode on that game and Gunpoint, I believe. So, yeah.
Do you want to know what's like crazy? And this is only crazy in like a, oh, our dreams matched up kind of thing. I didn't know they were doing Thomas for Comrade. I just nice. Sat down, looked at my Steam list of like games that were controller compatible. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to like just like play a game. And I was, oh, I'll do Thomas Was Alone. And I played it. And then I get the thing in my inbox saying, hey, it's, you know, it's ready to post. And I was like, oh, I'll go in here and monkey with the post and get it ready. Oh, Thomas, what?
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. My one complaint about it, like, I thought that in general, like, it, you know, it did a bunch of, like, the play was solid. It never had you do kind of like more of the same thing more than was welcome. Like, and there was, there were always little things it was trying to teach you about the interactions between these different characters. And the characterization was nice, you know, about the way that they were able to, you know, describe and show jealousy and justify that with the mechanics. Like, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little meme-y for my taste.
Okay, how do you mean?
By which I mean there are points where they you know, because they're artificial intelligences inside the system, and they're trying to get out and like glimpse the internet, right? And, you know, and break out and become self-aware. And they talk about like, oh, we got glimpses of cats that couldn't spell and cake, but we couldn't tell if it was going to be there when we got done or not. And it's like, dudes, like, do you, like, you have the potential to like make something that would have been a little bit timeless, but instead you kind of locked it into a time and place. And I understand that those memes have been around for, you know, just a shade under a decade now, so maybe I'm just being a crotchety old man saying like, hey, I like my memes to be where they belong, which is in the meme thread on Something Awful. But it was like, that just kind of seemed at like incongruous with the rest of it. So I don't know.
To be fair, if you got a random glimpse of the internet, it's pretty likely you'd see cats that couldn't spell very well.
Well, yeah, no, but it's pretty likely you would see an orifice gaping. So
those two might not be mutually exclusive. Oh.
Nobody say it.
Oh, my brain.
So
Colo?
Oh, it'll never stop being funny. Or never start. Think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's neat. I liked it a lot.
It made me want to go back and play through it again. I think one of the things I really liked, that you mentioned the characterization, but that's such a strong suit of the game. And I was thinking after listening to the episode, trying to put my finger on why it works so well. And especially when they start expanding to have like seven different characters, because usually when you expand like that, there's, you know, at least one or two duds in there. Mm-hmm. And I think what I really liked about it was that you kind of got to follow Thomas from you know, the very beginning and kind of experience his story and meet other people through his eyes. But then as the game, you know, got further in, you would meet up with people along the way, or, you know, start playing as people on the way and join them, you know, further into their story, not at the beginning. But because you'd established that really, really well done beginning with Thomas, you kind of credited that quality of backstory to everyone else and imagine that they must have had a similar experience. And so it was interesting to I think that's why the multiple characters worked so well, is that, you know, there was one really good foundation that, you know, kind of showed, okay, here's how someone would start in this world. And then you got to see all these variations on the ways it could play out.
Yep, you're right. And you know, adding more things onto it didn't dilute it. And I think that what was great about it is they kept it simple. And like each of the little blocks had maybe like two or three traits that defined them. And like all the story was in their perceived interactions that kind of mirrored, you know, their functionality and how each of them felt like an outcast in their own little way. You know, and like one of the achievements even is called the Breakfast Club because, in a lot of ways, each of us is a little bit the average block with okay jumping, the big block that can't jump at all. you talk about this in the easiest terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It is a really good game. And I recommend it.
Agreed.
And that is everything on my end.
You brought it this week, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, just making up for those.
I'm gonna follow you with relative weakness. I played one new game, which was Super Meat Boy, and that I got it in a bundle long, long ago, and couldn't play it on Mac. There was just something wouldn't start, and I don't know if they updated the game or if one of my system updates fixed it, but I was able to start it this time. So I spent some time monkeying around in there, and it is as brutally difficult as they say it is.
do you have a? Are you playing it on a just with your keyboard?
With my keyboard, yes.
Ooh.
See, I saw the controller recommended thing. I don't understand why they would say a controller is required. Like it's a three button game. There is left, there is right, and there is jump, and it, you know. There's nothing more to it than that. There is a run button, but you should never not be holding the run button.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had no trouble. Well, excuse me. I'm perceiving it as brutally difficult, but I understand that it is supposed to be brutally difficult, and I'm having no more trouble than anyone else is having. But yeah. I could be wrong. Maybe it is more brutally difficult for me than people on a controller. Who knows?
I just don't know that I would get the precision that I would want. The precision that I, as a hardcore gamer, deserve without the I can't think of a company.
Mad Cats?
Yeah, without the Mad Cats slam pad, you know, powered by Gamer Fuel.
Yeah.
It has a Gamer Fuel dispenser right on it.
Plays hell with the electronics, but...
Yeah. No, but sometimes you have to make sacrifices for quality.
So the controller thing, I think the controller, needing a controller is totally a thing in some games, like Castle Crashers is a great example, although part of that might just be the port and not really customizing it for a keyboard. But with Super Meat Boy, you know, I've had no trouble. It's been interesting watching the bell curve, I guess, or the exponential curve of my deaths. Because the first 10 levels, I died maybe once in all 10. The second 10 levels, I died maybe, you know, an average of once per level. And then the third 10 levels, I died like an average of 10 times per level. So it's interesting to see that ramp up here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you take the how are you reacting to the, you know, little display at the end of a level where you see all of the little ghost meats do their thing?
It's fun. I'm almost disappointed when there aren't very many of them on the screen.
Hey, Dennis, look at how many of you died. Which one is the real you? How can you be sure that the you that you are is the same as the you that's there? Oh, like, wait, there's this. Oh, wait, if you are the same, then you're dead. Maybe we're all dead. Think about it.
Wait, at what point does this game just become as written by M. Night Shyamalan?
that's excellent.
You know what, I might actually draw a line in the sand. I might actually make that like my, just, you know, you don't fuck with that around Cole thing, and anytime I see it, even when it's done well, I just go into like one of those little monologues that ends with think about it.
Yes. Yeah. I approve. Sorry. I don't think he, and maybe I'm just thinking too much, he did, I don't think he meant the anything to be any sort of commentary there. It's really just a fun, yeah, like, haha, look how hard this was. You did it.
Yeah.
And it functions great as that.
Yeah. Well, it's great because it's like, look at the mistakes you made.
Yeah. It's like, I can see exactly where I went wrong now. Mm-hmm. Or, you kind of try to pick out early on. I know I had that one really frustrating death. Where is it? Oh, there it is. But I got past it. So yeah, that's a lot of fun. And I'm glad, like I said, I don't know what caused it to work on Mac now, but I'm glad I'm able to play it. So that's been a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah. And then Dark Souls 2, and more Dark Souls 2. Hmm. More invading, more, not as much co-op, but a little more invading. It's been very interesting. Usually my approach to games is to beat the single player and only then go to the multiplayer. And I mean, just with Dark Souls, the nature of getting invaded is that interrupts you, of course. But I've found that whenever I am unsure as to what to do next, the multiplayer elements are my chorus to the single player areas in the game.
Yeah.
So I'll beat a boss and then I'll go do invading in that area for a bit. And then, you know, I'll find a new area, but go back and do some sunbrowing. And then, you know, it's a very nice kind of rhythm to the game that has caused it to feel much less frustrating when I'm butting my head up against a wall.
Yeah. You were sending me some great texts over the weekend. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I've started muttering to myself, it's not a puzzle game. It's not a puzzle game. You're overthinking it. It's not a puzzle game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a good time. And you know, anytime you're frustrated with an area, you can just go ruin someone else's day, and that kind of helps out. So.
Yeah.
So is it a lot easier to do co-op this time around?
So much easier. Yeah. I've never waited more than 10 seconds to have a summon sign taken. So.
Yeah. And like on the same token, like if you are trying to summon somebody, when a sign pops up, like you have to grab it as soon as possible because somebody else is going to take it. But a new crop is going to show up like in the next minute anyway. So
yeah, I've my policy is I will always touch red summon signs.
Yeah.
So that's where someone is asking, "Pretty please, may I invade you?" Mm-hmm. And I respect that. Like that's a tough thing to invite people in. So even if I don't feel fully prepared for it, as long as I'm not, you know, knee deep in a new area, I will always bring in the red summon signs.
Yeah.
And what is the what is your feeling? Sorry, we need this not to be the Dark Souls cast. What is your feeling on, like, how much do you try at a boss before you summon someone?
Once enemies start disappearing, I kind of am like, all right, time to finish this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think that there's any shame in summoning somebody. I think that if anybody's going to be like, you didn't play the real Dark Souls because you didn't solo every single boss. Like, no, if that's something dumb. You want to do for yourself, that's fine. But, like, they put it in there. It's a part of the game. And, like, you know, I think that out of courtesy to the people that you're summoning, like, maybe try the boss for yourself a couple times so you learn its patterns. But then, like, when it becomes go time, like, it's up to you to decide if this is something you want to, you know, take yourself or not. And there are certain bosses, you know, like, they change the structure of some of these enough where it's not one big thing that you're fighting, but a bunch of little things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that there are encounters that are, you know, unquestionably designed to have people in there with you.
Yeah.
I just know, Grant, I guess I did the NPC summons in the previous game.
Mm-hmm.
And I know both the gargoyles, with the first bell and the butterfly were both trivially easy with summons.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Yeah, which I think ultimately is a good thing.
It's just up to you to decide, really. I mean, you know.
Just a total inside joke for Cole, but with the gargoyles, you know, what's worse than one pyramid head? Two pyramid heads.
Yep. Oh man. Or six.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The final thing I'll say about Dark Souls 2 so far is guard breaking is my freaking power move.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like that, and nobody gets it. I've won so many invasions or beat so many invaders just because they don't understand how guard breaks work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, you idiot, I'm going to end this thing in 5 seconds because I see you turtling up, and 1, 2, 3, there we go. Yep, you're done.
And it's fantastic because in Dark Souls 1, you had the same kick pretty much, like, no matter what. Whereas in this, like, that actually becomes another, like, you know, you guard break differently with a short sword than with a halberd, right?
Yes. Yep.
And so, like, that becomes, like, a part of, you know, like a part of your calculus for deciding which weapon you want to use. You know, like, is this part of the moveset that I want to use? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's there will not be a week anytime in the near future where I haven't been playing Dark Souls 2. So, this has been Dennis's weekly Dark Souls 2 check-in.
Yeah. I like that there's a theme song for it.
Well, we talked about audio branding, right?
Oh, so. Yes, we did. Yeah, it was in the pre-roll, though. We were talking about Roombas.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. David, how about you?
Yeah, I've been playing a couple of things, although both fairly small. Jala gifted me for my birthday Mercenary Kings.
Okay.
So I've been playing around that. It's, I don't know if you've seen it. It's basically like, graphically, it's kind of Contra style graphics, although I've been told that the actual gameplay is much more similar to Mega Man in that it's like a four direction shooter.
It's like Metal Slug is what it is.
That's what I meant, not Contra. Metal Slug, what I meant.
Yeah, Mega Man is only one directional, so you can't control the direction that he shoots.
Oh, I thought you could shoot like down, up, and to both sides.
Nope.
Okay, well then.
Well, you can shoot to both sides. You just have to be facing the side that you're shooting.
Right, right.
Fair enough. It's... I don't know, the game is great. It's got a ton of personality just in terms of... you know, the animations and there's not a lot of voice acting, but, you know, what is in there is just really, really cool. And then, the graphics, it's the same guy that did, Scott Pilgrim versus the World and, Pirate Baby's Cabana Battle.
Yeah. No, it looks wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's truly, it's very, very good. As a side note, if you've never seen it, YouTube, Pirate Babies Cabana Battle.
All right.
Make sure you have your filter on.
What? Oh. Wow.
A little much. Yeah. Oh, so, yeah, it's black and white.
Yeah, so it's really good. It's also got kind of a... you craft your guns. It's kind of got... people seem to be comparing it to Monster Hunter. In that you, like, collect raw resources and then craft your guns together. So, for example, I at one point had, like, a shotgun with, like, a M16 magazine, and the barrel was the end of a tuba. So, yeah, it's really all over the place. The downside, though, is it seems a little bit easy, and it tends to be a little repetitive because you tend to run through the same levels like a bunch of times. So that's unfortunate, but I don't know. It's still worth playing.
Like with the weapon customization thing, you're almost making it sound like Borderlands.
It sort of, I mean, it has definitely that vibe. A little bit less emphasis on just like weirdness in terms of how the guns actually perform. You can get things where like, oh, your bullets bounce or like they'll fly through walls and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's just like, you know, rate of fire, you know, power, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you are upgrading it versus it being randomized, right?
Yeah, I suppose,
That's true. I have found, I don't know, at least for me, maybe this is just my game play style, but I found the shotgun style weapons to be a little overpowered. They don't have a lot of fall off, and they're generally semi-automatic, and you have to reload, but you have unlimited ammo, so pretty much just like I just like mash the button and just like fire a volley at enemies.
Nice.
But you know, still good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Is it co-op at all?
Yes, it does have co-op. I believe it's like 2 players online, 4 players local.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, something like that.
I could see that being the case.
Yeah, yeah. So the plot line makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. You're on this island trying to stop like some evil baron who is researching the power of like mandrakes, which allow him to like grow.
Scream people to death.
Well, apparently they allow him to grow an army of soldiers. And also, like, apparently one of your scientists discovered the mandrakes, and like both of the player characters you can play as, she like raised them from the dead using these like magical science powers.
Is it metal?
Yes, it is metal. magical science powered by mandrakes to grow clones? Come on. Wow, this has been a meme-y couple of episodes. Think about it.
Defenestration.
Nope.
Oh!
Pulling the plug right now. This has been... Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm curious about it. I'm going to put it on my wish list for right now.
By the way, be careful when adding things to your wish list that you add things to your wish list that actually work on your system.
Yeah, that's important.
I've felt really bad having to go to a couple people who have given me gifts and been like, hey, thank you. I can't use this.
And I should probably clarify my wish list policy. And it feels kind of shitty because I know that people who listen, you know, friend me and like see that, and I've gotten gifts for which I am incredibly appreciative. You know, just it's not It is a cool thing that people go out of their way to do. However, I do not add games to that specifically to have people buy them for me. I add them so I get notifications when they go on sale.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah, that is really the extent of it. So me saying, ooh, that'll go on my wish list is really just me saying, I will buy this when it goes on sale because I will get an email.
Yeah, you have a compulsive need to make lists.
Well, yeah, and I'm ordering this right now because it actually does need to go above Assassin's Creed 3. But I do not think that I want it more than, say, Rust. Or Nidhogg.
Nidhogg?
Yeah, fencing game.
Fencing game. All I'm saying is be careful what you wish list for.
That's so dumb. you knew it when you said it, so that means you have the power to stop it.
Yeah,
but I mean, really, Colo?
I think, So
sorry.
That's fine. Good.
Oh, sorry. Was there anything else on that?
No, I'd like to hear what else you played.
The other thing actually is a little bit old. I played it a little bit ago, but I've kind of been doing the hiatus thing. Have any of you guys heard of Ingress?
Uh-uh.
No.
It's a mobile game that's actually put out by Google. But it's basically, it uses the phone's GPS, and it's kind of a augmented reality type game where, like, landmarks around wherever you are. Real world landmarks have been GPS tagged, and you know there's a process like in game to to request new GPS tags.
Okay.
But if you're in a big city, most of them, most of the big ones will be. So like here on campus, like the zoo is tagged. I think like one of the hospital buildings is, most of like the monuments on campus are. And basically what it is it's like a sort of like capture the flag / like, marking your territory type thing.
Like a King of the Hill kind of thing?
Yeah. So basically there's two factions and, there's this whole like weird like pseudo cyberpunk backstory. But basically what boils down to is there's two factions, and you're trying to take over these points, and when you are able to, like, connect three points, you can link them together, and any of the area within that triangle is claimed for your team.
Oh.
And then you get a certain number of points, which is basically proportionate to the population density within that area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the idea there being that, like, yeah, I could, like, go out to the middle of nowhere and, like, capture some huge swath of land, and probably no one is going to come after it.
Mm-hmm. But it won't be worth as much. Whereas, like, if you're on campus and you're trying to hit the points around it, that might actually be more contested, but worth a lot more.
Exactly. And the way there's a whole system with how you capture them. Basically, you also can go around and hack the points, and you can hack them whether they're friendly or not. And those give you items that will be like, like an item might allow you to attack a point, or, might be something you'll use to, upgrade a point so that when someone tries to hack it, every time they do it, it damages them a little bit. Or things like that.
David, this sounds fucking rad.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. Apparently, it's become kind of a, it kind of pulls in some of the geocache vibe and that, some of it. Part of the game is sort of the social aspect of, you're walking around campus and, coordinating with the other people and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, just the idea that there are sides, and like immediately you start getting paranoid. Like, okay, this person is like really, really like giving Fountain Square the stink eye. You know,
and it's fun for me because like most of the people in like or a lot of the people in my department at the college like are really into it, and so it's things where like. For example, like you can't trade items; you have to drop them on the ground, and then you know have your other teammate there to pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
So, like one of our like department mates, like you know, suddenly one of the guys like stands up from the lab and like walks out, and so the other guy figures out that he's going to collect a drop, and so like runs out and waits for it to happen, and starts taking the items. You know, just like stuff like that, where it's, you know, there's a lot of meta to the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that is what you hope for with something like that that extends outward. This stuff is so fucking fascinating to me.
I just am. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was really just going to keep gushing. You probably have a more salient point, so go ahead.
Not really. I was going to say, I just want to imagine how this looks to someone who has no idea this game exists. Like, man, every day at 10, this guy walks past the Bearcat statue. And then every day at 3, this other guy, you know, walks past. But the intervals have gotten more frequent. So now one of them is passing pretty much every hour, you know, and checking in here. What the hell is going on?
I can say from my experience doing geocaches, you know, which is like you think you look like a terrorist. You know, but like nobody's paying that much attention to you.
this imagined person I'm describing is sitting on a bench next to the Bearcat statue 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So
no, like the imaginary person that you're describing is Mrs. Kravitz.
Yeah.
Anna, there's a strange man who's standing by the by the statue. Oh man, 1960s reference, high five, guys. Colo.
kind of to give some of that idea, my favorite is the game doesn't check z-axis.
Okay, so are you saying the z-axis as in depth, or are you being a German saying the axis?
It does not check z-axis. No, as in height. One of the best things is it doesn't check elevation at all.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the points is in the library we have this. It's a statue of a like robotic triceratops with a helicopter propeller.
As you do.
Yeah, apparently it's supposed to like talk about how awful war is by showing how awesome war could be.
we could be doing better. Is that the message of this?
I'm not sure. But there's a parking garage below it.
Uh-huh.
So I've learned that like on my way to class each day, I can just like walk into the parking garage and like capture the point from below.
Mm. That seems to be almost entirely against the spirit, though.
I don't know. Like, I feel like when it's to the point where it's very explicitly, like, learning the layout of the campus, I feel like that's within the spirit.
Hmm. Oh.
But.
Yeah, I love that idea, and I love the idea of, like, if they had it so that, you know, your phone could detect somebody who was nearby, who, like, was also, like, participating in that, like, marking you or giving you, like, a bing, bing, you have somebody, you know, in the area. Like, just, like, something to mess with that proximity. Like, I would love the idea, like, with some of these bands or with some of these phones, you know, or these apps. Like, you know, let's just make GDC or let's make, like, Comic-Con into this big ARG, right?
Yeah.
See, yeah. I'm just imagining walking into this room and, you know, blink!
It's like, one of you sons of bitches.
Where are you?
Which one of y'all dead motherfuckers captured my point? Yeah.
Just flipping tables in the school library. What the hell is going on?
This campus security comes up. This is bigger than the campus.
Triceracopter.
Oh man, crazy. Yeah, no, this is good. So it's not on iOS yet, but it's coming out this year. That'd be great. I hope it comes out when the weather is still good, because that would be fun to find some, you know, to do a little bit of participating in that.
Yeah. I'm sure no one at Epifio would be into that.
Oh no, they'd be all about it. Like, we could form a team, actually. Oh, like you've got a ton of I sounded real sarcastic. Ben, you've got a ton of landmarks in Las Vegas. This would be right up your alley. But like, no, you could probably you know, make that into a thing, having never been to Las Vegas.
What do you mean?
Everything is a landmark, sorry. Yeah.
Since it's not desert.
No, just kind of like, you know, just I would say that like the points of interest per square foot are really high in Las Vegas compared, and it's like the parts of Las Vegas that you see a lot of the time compared to other places, right?
Maybe. I have a very low value of the city in comparison to most people, so okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm biased.
Yeah, I'm excited for when this comes out for iOS, because I'd like to give it a little shot.
It'll be an adventure. We'll set up a team, and we shall conquer the natty.
Yeah. Cool. You guys want to button it up?
Let's do so.
All right, so thank you, everybody. That was the 56th episode of The Level. We really appreciate you sticking around and listening. We enjoy doing this every week, and we like having you. So things you can do, going to keep this brief. As we mentioned before, in the multiplayer, we have a Facebook page where discussion happens. That is facebook.com/thelevel. iTunes ratings and reviews are always appreciated. There are other shows on the network, and if you would like to, help us out monetarily, that is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. Use the Amazon link there, and that helps keep the lights on. This has been a record, but March was a record month for the show, and I would like to thank everybody. If you are new, let us know how you found us. And if you want to help continue that growth, go ahead and tell a friend. You know, say, hey, there are these guys. I have no idea why they're talking about video games, but people seem to like it. Yeah. As far as, I'm not going to name every other show on the network, but one that always needs love is Abject Suffering. Check out the duckfeed.tv SoundCloud to see a little excerpt from the most recent episode, which is one of my favorite moments in podcast this year, at the very least, from the Body Harvest episode. Am I missing anything, guys?
I think that's it.
Cool.
We will have a page up for meme submissions soon.
Ugh, I don't want that. I really don't want that.
No, not for the existing memes, for new memes. We're going to go for the most memes in a podcast.
No, because what's going to happen is, like, you know, people are like, ah, Doge. Because it's unclear. Like,
which, you say that, but we did spend a significant amount of time doing Doge jokes a couple episodes back.
Yeah, we did. it might be our wheelhouse. I don't know. So I am Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia, at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David Moneysmith, at Moneysmith777 everywhere.
I'm Ben Merkel, at Colo.
Damn it. You scooped me. So until next time, just remember, Colo, think about it. Hey, Ben. What is that?
I spilled my dinner, and so Roomba's helping me out.
Oh no, your poor dinner.
He's hungry.
Have you named it?
Not yet. I'm trying not to get attached.
Okay. 80% of people name the Roomba.
80%?
Yeah, like, I saw something, it was, like, statistics on the idea of, like, you know, personifying robots, and it was, like, some, like, fairly high percentage, like, has taken the Roomba with them on, like, family vacations.
That's insane.
How many have, like, what's the percentage of people who put googly eyes on their Roombas?
I don't know. I would hope
not. Yeah, not high enough is the answer to that question.
Factory standard. Factory standard is the right answer.
That's a good point. Like, I'm going to go write them an angry letter about how that is not an option.
Yeah, no, it totally should be. Does it always sing that little song when it gets to work, that do-do-do?
Yeah, it does.
Huh.
It whistles while it works.
Our washer and dryers have a little melody that they play when they finish up, which is just the happiest thing that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And it
really disturbs me on some deep level.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure who the first person was like, I know, let's have it sing a song. But it's one of those ideas that it had to sound crazy until they actually did it. And then it was really cool and makes you feel really happy.
And people started putting googly eyes on their washer and dryer.
Ben, is your Roomba with you right now? And are you going on and off of mute?
I am. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. I didn't want to Roomba up the podcast. So
it sounds like you're standing next to a jet engine.
Well,
he actually got the industrial class Roomba. He truly is standing next to a jet engine.
Yeah,
this is a small dog. Yeah,
yeah, it's from Boston Dynamics. It's the.
It is both cleaning and incinerating my carpet.
Yeah.
Roombot 9000.
You may not agree with his methods, but he gets the job done.
He gets results. Damn it.
You're a loose cannon, Roomba.
Oh, man. Have you DJ Roombaed it?
Not yet.
Yeah.
But I want to attach a knife onto it and knife fight Roomba.
Wait, what's that from? Is that something?
I'm pretty sure I've seen pictures online of a Roomba with a knife taped to it.
Roomba knife fighting.
Yeah.
So it's a lot like hobo knife fighting. You'd like throw some food on the ground in between them and they fight over like vacuuming out.
If I had a Roomba, the temptation to like feed it Skittles would be tremendous. Here you go, buddy.
Just Roomba like, taste rainbow.
Yeah. No,
that,
just like,
that would be an amazing, like, if I ever needed like some quirk just to convince someone that I was like an eccentric madman, that would be awesome to just like keep a bag of Skittles and do it like you know, the same way with the dog, like, here boy.
No. Okay, so a couple times every day you take your Roomba for a walk, which entails leaving a trail of Skittles leading up to a window so he gets a nice view of the outside, and then he goes about his business.
Wait, so is what you're actually saying is that Roomba is E.T.?
I guess?
Huh. So, thinking of Roombas, we had a toy robot when we were little that was very much the same thing. Like, it would just roam forward until it bumped into something and then turn and move. And it had three buttons on it, and each would play a different sound, right? And we loved this toy. We had it for probably a year. And then we figured out, after having it for a year, that if you push two of the three buttons at the same time, it would create an entirely new sound. And it wasn't just the two sounds on top of each other, it was like some completely random other thing. And that was the most amazed I've ever been as a child. It was like, everything I know is a lie. Whole new worlds of possibilities.
You're walking around hitting two buttons on everything.
Yeah. They hated me in elevators.
Yeah, no, you hit two buttons on the microwave and it turns the food cold.